you think life is simpler after you retire? For some, it's actually more complicated when facing issues about health, estate plans, probate, long-term care, and more. That's why attorney CPA Joe Cordell hosts Elder Talk, providing smart strategies for seniors and an open forum for older adults with important questions about their future. Here's attorney CPA Joe Cordell.
Welcome to Elder Talk. This is Joe Cordell and my co-host, Susan Arthur. We have a guest today who I'm confident will have a lot of very useful information for you today. I know that many of our listeners are grandparents. Grandparenting in the holidays is not a simple thing. As a matter of fact, I'm convinced it's more complicated today than it was 50 years ago. So we have someone whose ministry, whose life is devoted to grandparenting, meaning that this is a guest, Larry Fowler, who we've had on in the past. He's with Legacy Coalition. He has this vision for a grandparenting ministry, and he brought together this team from family, children's, and youth ministry leaders. And this is what he's been dedicated to for over 40 years. So who better to talk to us about this topic? And incidentally, isn't he also, Susan, backed by popular demand?
Backed by popular demand. We had Larry on probably 2 or 3 months ago, I guess, talking about grandparenting. And we had so much information. We said we got to have him back. And we thought, what better than the holiday season when everybody's busy and families are getting together? And we can kind of talk about the grandparents and the role that they play with their children and grandchildren throughout the holidays.
A critical role.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me, have I failed to say something that we want our audience to know further about Larry?
Well, he is also a national speaker and workshop presenter. He's the author of books on children and family, including the Rock Solid series and his latest book, The Question Nobody Asks About Our Children. So thanks a lot for joining us again, Larry.
Glad to be with you guys and looking forward to it.
So now, Larry, let's start with I guess we have the grandparenting situation where kids and grandparents and grandkids live in different locations. So maybe grandparents are somewhere else, and I think it's often customary for the parents and the grandkids to go visit the grandparents. Is that typically the way it's still done?
Well, that happened in our family over Thanksgiving here. So you're talking about something that was, you know, recent history for us. We have grandkids that live close by, but we also have a set that what, by the way, I'm in Southern California. Please don't hold that against me, but here in Southern California, and then we have a set in Colorado Springs. So the Colorado Springs set came to visit us.
So now, is there sometimes some pressure on the grandparents to come for at least the actual specific Christmas days, to come to the home of the kids, the grandkids, because the parents want to maintain some continuity with Christmas? I know that was kind of a bit of a deal in our discussions and planning as our kids were growing up, that to celebrate Christmas in the same place. So it often meant the grandparents had to travel to our location, which sometimes that was more difficult than others. As a matter of fact, there are a few years where it couldn't be done. Is this often an issue?
Well, I think it is. And in fact, the issue about even where to meet or whose homes, or especially when the grandkids have several sets of grandparents, how do you work out, how the parents work out equal time between the grandparents? And then if there's a set of grandparents that really want them and want to keep the family traditions going, it certainly can be just a source of conflict, even for where you're going to meet and when.
Well, and I think that's where perhaps things have changed a little bit over the years. You know, years ago, it was the traditional two-parent family. You had one set of grandparents for the dad, one set for the mom. And now you have often
four
sets at least. I mean, and sometimes there's more than that. I mean, I've run into that. And so then you have that tension of, well, we're trying to get everybody. It's not that they dislike anybody, but they're trying to meet everybody's needs. And then their kids feel like they're lugged from house to house to house to house. And what do you do in those situations?
Well, I think let's start by saying this. The holidays are an opportunity. And the holidays are an opportunity to either be a blessing or a curse to our families, in a sense. And being a blessing means sometimes making sure that you're less selfish, and you're willing to say, you know what, we'll serve you. And especially as grandparents, there's going to come a time where family traditions need to transfer to the younger generation anyway, and where they are the ones that are going to have to set for the future. And so we need to be the bigger person and allow them to make some decisions and then not get bent out of shape if they're not quite the decisions that we want to have them make.
Yeah, I can see where the grandparents are really a hugely important component to the holidays. I mean, I think that's always been true, and I don't think that's changed, has it?
Well, no. And there's certainly holidays on the positive side, and we talked a little bit about that, then maybe the tension that could come in a holiday. But on the positive side, the holidays produce an opportunity for grandparents to really influence their grandkids and their whole family, because it is a time where we get together more regularly than we do during the rest of the year.
But, you know, I can see how there's this natural tendency to have some resentment whenever grandparents feel that maybe the other, as you mentioned, the other set of grandparents are perhaps getting more attention, or perhaps their kids are not showing them the interest that they think they should show during the holidays. I can see how grandparents, who probably have more time to think about this than they should, can easily spin something into, you know, a slot that might not have been intended. Or maybe their children are guilty of being insensitive on these issues because they live in a different world, and it's hard to step into the circumstances of the grandparents. It's funny, the grandparents have been where their kids have been, but their kids have not been where their parents, or rather the grandparents, are. So I can see how there is this potential for hurt feelings, especially on the side of the grandparents.
Yeah, that was good, Joe. That was a good comment. That's exactly right. But if we focus on, okay, so how can we do this? How can we do the holidays so that the grandkids receive the greatest benefit, the greatest blessing from how we're doing things? What does that look like? Well, it probably doesn't look like us bickering with the other adults, whether that's our adult children who are the parents, or whether it's the other set of grandparents or whatever. It's just not productive.
Yeah, definitely not the conflict. So if you were going to issue, you know, your own kind of list of cautionary things, and you have listening to you, probably the vast majority of our audience has grandchildren, I'm sure. So what are the pointers that you might give a grandparent, in addition to what you've said already? What are the additional things that you might caution them regarding potential pitfalls of Christmas, holidays?
I would start with this one. Stop parenting and make sure that you're grandparenting. You know, there's a difference between the two. Parenting means that we can many times during the hall during the holidays look like, well, we want to give you some advice on how to parent or how to raise your kids or something like that. You know,
that's
after
a good
all
one.
Those adult kids, they are our children, and so we have the natural inclination to want to treat them like we did when they were in our homes, but they're not. They're not there anymore. And we need to recognize that. And even if we disagree with them on some decisions that they're making or some techniques that they use, you know, even in things like discipline, we need to let those go. And we need to step into grandparent mode. And grandparent mode means that we love them. We love the grandkids. We seek to influence, but we don't do it as in the parent-child role that we used to have with them.
Yeah, that's good. Love and influence them as opposed to the sort of parenting that they're used to doing.
Well, another thing is leave the advice behind during the holidays. Bury the advice for a while.
Very good.
And in fact, you know, advice when it's not asked for often is received as criticism. Mm. And so if we step into advisor mode, that's close to the parent mode, then we end up making, we responsible ourselves then for making holiday time more tension filled.
Boy, I hope our listeners are making notes of some of these things. I'm making notes of them.
Advice when it's not asked for sounds like criticism.
I know, I'm thinking about that.
Oh, that's really good. As I start to parent a young adult.
Yeah, me too. And I'm thinking, so that's the reason my kids are offended so often. But
Well, but we want to give them the advice that the issue is, so what kind of approach works?
Yeah.
And the kind of approach that works isn't just to blurt out what we think all the time.
And especially when our kids are adults versus when they're children.
Well, exactly. Because they now are the authorities in their own family. And, you know, we need to respect that and work with them with that in mind.
Yeah, I think that often comes up a lot of times, at least when I've seen it, is maybe in the discipline thing. Discipline has shifted and styles of discipline has shifted over the last 25, 30, 40 years from, you know, timeouts are now the norm, whereas maybe they weren't so much the norm several years ago or when I was growing up and that kind of thing. So I think that's always one of those hot button issues where if a child misbehaves, and they often do over the holidays because they're tired, they're full of sugar, their schedule is messed up, that you have a completely different approach to discipline these days.
Well, I would imagine that in most cases, parents and grandparents have an identical end in mind. And the end in mind that they would like to see is that the child behaves.
Yeah.
But the method of getting there may be different. And that's, grandparents need to focus on the end in mind and then do what they can to support the methods that the parents choose. Now, I have to confess, when I was a young parent, I wasn't always all that consistent in applying discipline. You know, I'd say to my kids, you know, you need to obey me right this second. Well, the second passed and I didn't do anything, or I'd count to three and then start counting all over again when they didn't respond, you know, and things like that. So I was far from perfect as a parent myself. Mm-hmm. Young parents are,
but yeah.
If instead we try to understand, okay, what method are you trying to use to accomplish this end, then we jump into that and support them and encourage them in making that method effective, we'll get along a lot better and probably get further along in the process.
And, you know, thankfully, our children come to, God has wired into this system a lot of room for a lot of error. Because, you know, parents, at least in the early years, by definition, don't know what they're doing. I mean, they're new to it. And so we all make a lot of mistakes, and thankfully our kids, for the most part, don't suffer for our mistakes. But I'm very interested in these comments you made so far, and it's such wisdom for me as well as I know our audience. But number one, you've mentioned grandparent, don't parent, you know, and the grandparent loves, influences. I think many of us know what grandparenting is. We know it when we see it. And many of us can describe it at its best, but so often it can degenerate into parenting, as you've already said. So that was number one, hugely important, I think. Number two, you said, leave advice home during the holidays. Great. That's and then let's continue on. I know that embedded in your comments so far are various other suggestions, but what next would you say if you're talking to somebody who's saying, give me the most important points on how I should behave over the holidays in their role as grandparent?
Well, think through how you can be a positive influence. And this is related to what I just said, but maybe it fleshes it out just a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that influence comes through relationships, not through control. So if a holiday situation comes up and we don't really like the way it's going, you know, maybe it is over even where the Thanksgiving dinner is going to take place or where we're going to open presents for the kids on Christmas morning. And we don't like it. What we can do is we can try to control, and that's almost always counterproductive to be able to do that. But if we want to have a positive impact in our grandkids' lives, we do it through influence, and influence comes through the relationship. So holiday time becomes a time to double down on building strong relationships, increasing the effectiveness of our love for them and focusing on those things. And then when we do that, then eventually the doors will open for advice giving, but it'll be invited in rather than something that we push on them.
But isn't it a source, though, of frustration that have you seen what I've commonly seen is where there are just lots of activities that are booked and planned, and so the kids naturally want to go, and often there's not the family time that you look back and you think, I wish I had more of that, you know, a decade or two later. When you're wiser, you look back and you see all that time you spent running around the holidays and maybe not spending as much time there with the family, even though they may be technically together. In reality, there's not the quality time. Do you find that it's difficult to provide those sort of qualitative moments in the hectic scheduling that you often see over the holidays?
Well, of course. And in fact, I may be simplifying it here a little bit, but I really think that it comes down to a lack of planning or thinking intentionally ahead of time. So here we are, as we're recording this, we're a few days ahead of Christmas. So I'm wondering how many grandparents out there have said to the parents, you know what, let's really try to do something together as a family.
Very good.
What could that look like and what could it be? And if we'll preempt the busyness with just a conversation ahead of time, what could the family do together? Let me give you an example that's just a real simple one. Grandmas that are listening, invite your grandkids into the kitchen when you're preparing meals and get them to help you and work together. One of the blessings for us at Thanksgiving time was our older grandkids that are from Colorado Springs. They're 17 through 22.
Hmm.
All of them came into the kitchen and, you know, grandma gave them jobs to do. And it was just really, really cool watching our grandkids just work with grandma on preparing the food for the Thanksgiving meal. And so that's family doing things together. So it can be the things that you would normally do. The other thing that you need to prepare for is you need to prepare for individual time alone with each one of the grandkids. So to me, it's two things, Joe and Susan. It's families making sure that they're doing things together and then individual time with the grandkids.
So would that be taking them somewhere? Would that be playing a game? I mean, any of the above? I'm thinking about like those middle schoolers and early teens that are just kind of, you know, in their own world and aren't always as excited to kind of do the family thing together.
Well, I think it is, for me, it is getting time alone with them. So it may be that during the holidays, if you have two or three days together, you say, you know what, I'm going to take each one of you out for coffee or for a Coke or something like that, and just spend time face-to-face with them without the other family around. That produces some of the greatest memories, and you're giving your full attention to that one grandchild. And they're not so likely to be looking at their phone when you're sitting across the table in a one-on-one conversation with them. But I can guarantee you in many family times, the teenage kids especially are going to be looking at their phone while things are going on. So you got to get them apart so that you have their full attention.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I can see where really it is a failure of planning more often than not, because when I think of how easy it is to just kind of float into the holidays as opposed to thinking in advance about what can I do to influence what we're doing and so that I assure that there are some opportunities such as you've described. And I think that many times grandparents are guilty of not taking any of those proactive steps. It does require planning, and it does require effort, and we're not used to thinking in terms of planning and effort in that role. It's supposed to be easy, right? Grandparenting is supposed to be, you know, the Disneyland of parenting, but it still requires some work.
Well, we're really big in our ministry on the word intentional, and I think that it's fairly easy for grandparents to figure out what intentional might look like in their situation, because, you know, we've been around the block a few times. We know a few things. But we often don't stop and just think about being intentional. And intentional does mean planning ahead, thinking ahead. Okay, what do these holidays provide as far as an opportunity to really be a positive influence in my grandkids' lives? And then make those things happen. We can do better than simply just doing by the seat of our pants.
So tell me, what do you think are among the most important things to say in those moments? Let's assume that there was this sort of intentional, this planning, and that this opportunity now has come into being. And so the grandparent is alone with these children at various points. What do you think, how do you think that time is best invested one-on-one?
Well, one of the first things that grandparents need to do is to ask a lot of questions and not interrogating them, but finding out about their world. You want the grandchild to want to do this again another time. And so you've got to make it pleasant for them and fun for them to be able to spend time, well, maybe not fun, but pleasant and enjoyable for them to spend time alone with grandma or grandpa. So you accomplish that by asking about their world and what's going on in a way that's genuine interest, really wanting to help to understand them better. And as you ask questions, there will be opportunities for you to be able to share a story from your past, or maybe offer a word of advice in the right moment that will help them to react to the to their world and the things that are going on around them. So you've got to make it enjoyable for them, and of course for most kids, they enjoy talking about themselves and their world and what's going on.
Yeah, I can. Go ahead, you're about to say something, Susan.
Well, I was just thinking of those leading questions that get you away from the good, fine, yeah, I don't know. Because you can tell I have teenage boys at my house. You know, that's kind of what we get a lot. And so I think sometimes maybe even planning ahead some of the questions you want to talk about. Not, like you said, not an interrogation, but tell me about this or something along those lines. I mean, knowing at least what they're participating in, either at school or in their after school life, or maybe even, I mean, would it be a good idea to find out about some video game they like? Or,
well, yeah, at the risk though that they'll end up playing it,
right. But I mean, you know, I don't know. Let them tell you about it or something. I don't know.
Well, surely there are special interests that they have. I mean, you would agree with this, right? That it, you know, if there are particular special things the kids are interested in, whether it's, you know, a hobby, whether it's sports or whatnot, I guess that's a door opener, isn't it?
Well, yeah, and even in terms of video games, because many grandparents are going to, you know, they're going to really, you know, the hair on the back of their neck is going to stand up when their grandsons start talking about video games. Yeah. But to be able to say, so tell me about this video game. What about it do you like so much? I asked that question of one of my grandsons a few years ago, and he started telling me about how three of his friends and him could play the game all together. You know, they were all in their own homes, but it was a game where they could get online, they could play it together, and they just loved it. It was so much fun to do it with his friends. And I thought, well, you know what? I haven't thought about that piece of it as being attractive. And so if we understand, we ask them, tell me about your friends, tell me about this video game, tell me about this activities that you're doing, then what we're doing is getting them to talk, and the more that we can get them to talk, they're going to enjoy it and give us an opportunity to build that relationship with them.
Yeah, I can see where it's important to appeal to their interest. I mean, you want to know your grandkids, and you want to grow closer to them, and I guess the starting point is by, you know, looking at what interests them.
Well, I have a story for you. I may have shared this other time, but my second grandson, about a year or so ago, came to us and he says, "Grandpa and Grandma, I want to get a tattoo."
Oh.
Well, you know, most of our generation doesn't see tattoos the way that the younger generation
right.
does.
Yeah, you're right.
And so I was bracing already, and then he said, "But here's what I want. I don't want to just get some clip art tattoo. I want it to be something that means something. So, Grandma and Grandpa, could you think about what sort of symbol I could get that would help me remember the two of you for the rest of my life?" And all of a sudden, the idea of a tattoo didn't sound quite so bad to me.
Yeah, I guess if your kid's going to have, grandkid's going to have a tattoo, it might as well be something to remind them
of
you,
something
right?
to remember Grandma by. That's not such a bad thing.
Well, and I know also you want to take that opportunity, and my wife and I talk about this a lot because a little bit of background, you know, in her family, it's not so much a practice to really talk a lot about ancestors, to talk a lot about what was great and important and wonderful about, you know, a grandfather, and to speak in this worshipful way about your father or your grandfather or your great-grandfather. And my, you know, I think my wife's family, because they are more divided up, meaning they kind of spread out and a bunch of kids, and they didn't maintain those relationships as much with ancestors further back. So there's not, you know, that tradition. Whereas I grew up in Appalachia, and in Appalachia, you know, it's almost ancestor worship, meaning that, you know, you're very, very respectful of your ancestors, and you know all about them, even though you've never met them. You know all about, because those stories are passed down. And not all good, meaning, you know, they're fleshed out in human terms, but that's part of what's valuable about that, those pictures. So I would think that as a grandparent, among the things that I would want to accomplish would be to be sure that my children have a good sense, my grandkids have a good sense for where they come from, you know, these wonderful personalities in their family tree, and, you know, these incredible people that were their forebears. Sometimes grandparents are the only ones really to transmit that information if their kids are of a culture where, you know, that just, you move on all too often, it seems, and some of that is lost. Do you see that?
Yes, and in fact, I frame it this way. I'm involved in a ministry, and we look at things from a ministry perspective, but I believe that young people really need to have a sense of identity, a sense of belonging in two areas. First of all, in terms of their faith walk, they need to understand they are Christians and that they belong to Christ.
Yeah.
And that would be, of course, if that's true.
Right.
But a second one that is also really significant is they need to have a sense of belonging and identity in the family. So identity comes from from their spiritual connections. Identity comes from their family connections.
Hmm.
And every young child is going to find their identity. If they don't find it in our family, they'll find it in the streets. And of course, that's why young people join gangs, is because they have no family identity.
Yeah.
And so the very thing that you're talking about, you know, talking about ancestors, talking about a family line, gives that sense of specialness and identity to young people that is just a positive thing.
Yeah, yeah. And really, the grandparents may be the only way to transmit that information. If the grandparents don't fulfill that role, the connection could be lost.
Probably, yes, exactly. So we have a real important role as a family historians, and it's more about just remembering the facts and passing on the facts. It is about, to me, it's about creating that family identity that's going to serve the kids well throughout their lives. You know, my last name is Fowler, and so I tell my grandkids, you know what, you know, the Fowler name means something. And talk about their grandfathers of being men of character, and I tell my grandsons, I want you to be the same thing. I want you to be the same way. And that identity is beyond just a name. It's to the character and values that go along with the name.
Yeah, and the pride. I mean, they're
yes,
and it's something all families have the ability to be proud. You know, whatever you know, bad apples they might have in the family tree, which we all have some of those. You know, the point is, it's a basis for pride.
You bring up an important point, because there isn't always a family where there is pride. And we have that example. My daughter's first marriage failed, and so my grandsons carried the name of their biological dad. It really was an embarrassment to them, not something to be proud of at all. And so we talked a lot about, okay, so you almost have the opportunity to redeem this family name. You have an opportunity to it should mean something, and it doesn't. So it can start with you, and you can make the name mean something. We tried that approach. It seemed to work quite well with them. And then our daughter remarried, and her husband has adopted them and given them a different last name, and now they have such a sense of identity there, and it's a great thing. But we've gone through that experience of the name not meaning what we would like it to mean.
Well, yeah, and a short of infamous names, I guess I would push back a little bit if I understand what you're saying, because I would suggest that, if this is the bio dad, for lack of a better way to put it, if this is the biological dad, I mean, that family then, there's this incredible, genetic, if nothing else, connection that that child should have a great deal of interest in that family name. And let's just say that family. So even though, I assume in this example you're giving, they didn't know the dad, or the dad wasn't a very good guy, maybe even the immediate family wasn't, but there's no getting away from that 50% of his, his biological heritage is from that side of the family.
In this case, the dad was also adopted. So the biological connection, it was hard to find it beyond
that. So they don't know who the dad is,
Well, the family.
They know who dad is. They don't know the rest of the dad's family.
Dad's background.
But they know who the biological dad is my question.
Yeah.
Well, okay. I mean, it's one of those realities that we know how important that is today that we didn't know 500 years ago, although they intuited it 500 years ago.
And it's just a personal lens. A personal example for us that family is sometimes messy.
And complicated.
How are we going to react when it's complicated or messy? And we want to react with as much grace and love and kindness as we possibly can in every situation.
Well, and as a grandparent, you're kind of, there's not a lot you can do to necessarily change the circumstances. I mean, the grandkids are going to have to deal with that, and your daughter is going to deal with that. But the question then becomes is, how do you respond to the struggles that your daughter faces and the struggles that your grandchildren face because of those challenges in their lives? And what you're doing is giving them something to hold on to, it sounds like.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And I think that's an important role, because families are messy. I mean, they're messy at the holidays. I think many families have things where it's like sometimes it's quiet and sometimes it's not. I mean, you just have those moments where there's things that life is difficult at that particular time. And I think as grandparents, you have a big role to play in helping your grandchildren connect.
Yeah. And a perspective I come from, and this may have been reflected in fact, a little bit in my remarks just now to what we were talking about with dads, is that, Cordell and Cordell, which many of our listeners know and you may not, but it's a domestic relations firm that represents men in divorce. And it's the largest firm, I'm sure, in the United States. We're in 80 markets or so. And we're in California in four or five cities. So, but anyway, the mission of Cordell and Cordell is to represent dads in domestic relations cases. And much of that relates directly or indirectly to preserving their role and their influence in the family. And all too often, the dads intentionally or unintentionally are shunted aside. And grandparents, understandably, mom's grandparents or mom's parents, understandably, you know, they see things from a particular perspective. And so it's rare for that perspective to not be more favorable to their daughter than to her ex-husband. But for a parent, for grandparents to be capable of and willing and even determined to preserve that those links with both parents is unusual. I mean, that's a heroism that I wish I saw more often among the parents, especially of daughters of the mom. But I can tell you, it's all too common that not only is the husband, but even the family, the ex-husband and his family, not presented in a positive light at all. So I would say the holidays would be an occasion maybe to affirm, you know, those linkages on both sides of the family. Do you agree with that?
Oh, sure. And in fact, the holidays accentuate the fact that when a divorce happens, usually the relationship with a grandparent goes to an extreme, one way or the other. In other words, mm-hmm. grandparents either are highly invested in their grandkids' lives, and they become the salve for the wounds, and they become the stable the stable relationship in an unstable life of a grandchild.
And in some cases, a surrogate parent even. But
yes, yes. Or it goes the exact opposite way, and they're completely shut out.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it rarely stays in the middle. It rarely stays normal. It either becomes they're highly, highly involved, or they're not involved at all. And then that really is seen clearly during the holidays.
Well, what's a grandparent to do in if they're more shut out? I mean, are there any steps that they can take to reestablish? I mean, are the holidays a good time to do that, or should they just lay low and try and keep building relationship and reestablishing relationship throughout the year?
Well, that's a hard question. Let me just tell you that one of the things that a grandparent can do, and this is really, really hard, but one thing the grandparent to do is to be patient and have a long-term viewpoint of this, because while there may be too much tension that's not directly involving them, you know, maybe the tension between the two parents, but when there's so much tension that relationships become really, really difficult, maybe the grandparents can say, God, you know, keep me around long enough so that I can rebuild a relationship with this grandchild when they become a young adult. You know, there's always the possibility that in the future that grandchild is going to want to reconnect with the family line and roots. And so that's way out there, I know. But if grandparents that are listening are really struggling with this, don't lose hope that sometime in the future you can have an influence in that grandchild's life. Don't give up that hope. Even if it's years into the future, don't give it up.
Yeah, you know, you. I think what you've said is wisdom. I know that in some states there are opportunities for grandparents in a divorce situation to get, you know, rights of access and visitation, but it's often an ugly road. I wouldn't always discourage it, don't get me wrong, but often I would, meaning that it just exacerbates already inflamed relationships. And when you have access occurring under those, you know, very hostile conditions, which tend to flow from litigation worse than what they are before it starts, then often the good that you expect to come out of that just somehow gets lost. And and I think what you said is often, you know, the best among the undesirable alternatives or unpleasant alternatives that are there.
Well, and let me give one more answer. I'm sure you guys both agree with this a lot too. But so if when you're in the heat of the moment and when the holidays are coming up, just be the most like Jesus that you can possibly be. Other words, be the most loving. You don't need to give the biggest gifts, but you can be the most loving. Be the most patient. Be the most kind. all of those things will, in the long run, result in relationships being restored and opportunities for influence coming up. And don't let the anger get a hold of you. Don't let the resentment, let those things go, and just determine that in this stage of life, you're going to be the best example of Jesus that you can possibly be.
I think that has to be the best overarching approach to this whole discussion. And I would add too that grandparents can easily get to the point where they feel this proprietary right, which I get it. I mean, God intended for them to play an important role. I mean, no doubt that's the natural order of things. But at the end of the day, when push comes to shove, it's the parents who will make the final decisions regarding the children. And I think that's the way it has to be. It could result in a world in which a grandparents, are excluded. And as bad as that is, it's probably better than the world in which grandparents and doubtlessly others would end up trumping parental authority. And we see this happening already, this erosion that's taking place, in the many claims to authority over children. So, at the end of the day, there will be grandparents who are victims. But I think your advice is the best possible advice to approach this, and doubtlessly will salve and heal and improve relationships for the vast majority of people who are listening.
And there's no better strategy to create an environment where we can have an influence than thinking about our own character and who we are. And, it's interesting that a verse in the Old Testament that talks about the role of grandparents is Deuteronomy 4:9. The end of the verse says, teach your children and your children's children. So it's a command directly to grandparents. But the verse starts with this, watch yourselves. And if there's anybody that we ought to be looking at as to, what is their character, what is their response to tough situations, everything? We ought to be looking at ourselves, looking in the mirror. And the better that we can react, the greater the opportunity for influence down the road.
I love what you're saying about keeping the end in mind. Talking about having influence later, I've seen that happen with a couple of good friends of mine. It's a kind of a messy situation between a son and a daughter-in-law, and actually the first grandson is not really related to her son, and it's just been messy. And they did that. They took the moral high ground, and years later, he did come back and say, you guys were always the stable factor in my life. You guys were always the one that always showed me love and always cared. And he calls them grandma and grandpa. And I think, boy, that there were lots of hard times in between, but having the end in mind about we're wanting to influence him down the road is what keeps you going.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think also about, I tell a similar thing when I was practicing domestic relations, which I don't do now, but my advice was commonly to parents, to my clients, which were typically the dads, is that, alienation, meaning taking that opportunity that parents have to sort of advance their position and undermine the other party or diminish the other party in some way. Many times parents find that irresistible almost, given the heat of the moment and the level of the hostilities and whatnot. But kids can be counted on to look back in adulthood. And despite the propaganda and whatnot, the substantial majority of kids will look back with a much clearer eye. I mean, they'll have the eye and the perspective of an adult. And then lots of things that sold well and played well when they were 10, 12, 15 and younger, suddenly, appear for what they are, which is just manipulation and distortions, or in any case, an effort to undermine the other parent, even if it's true stuff. So, it's it, I would suggest that grandparents who can get caught in this cycle, just like the parents, you know, as kind of advocates for their children, that they resist that, and that following the advice you just said, you know, have Jesus's attitude, that they be very charitable toward even a dad. I say dads, it could be the mom, but to be very charitable toward that ex-spouse, that ex-in-law, who may very well be deserving, in some sense of the word, of criticism. Meaning, it's not to approve what they've done or what they are, but to simply not pile on. It's I know you would agree with that advice.
Yes, and of course, the other part that I would add to that that you just made me think of too is, of course, if we're going to be like Jesus, we're going to recognize that sin is sin. And, you know, we tend to categorize sin a lot, and especially we categorize other people's sins as much worse than our own. You know, we diminish our own. So we're going to, you know, the tendency or the temptation is to badmouth somebody else because of this awful thing that they've done, and we forget about the awful things that we've done. And when we see all sin as sin, and all of us in need of grace and love and forgiveness, then that helps us also to have a better perspective in concerning the things, the hurts that we have in our families.
Yeah, you know, we're running out of time. I think we're wrapping up here with what clearly has to be the best and overarching approach to this is, you know, if we subject any ideas to the sort of screen that you suggest, then I think that you know we're likely to not err much, if at all. So we have about a minute and a half left. Give us one final comment to grandparents going into the holidays here. Anything else you might add? You've said some wonderful things so far. I've been making notes myself here.
I've got most of my thoughts in, so maybe I can just summarize them again. So, number one, think ahead to the holidays. Think ahead as to how you might better connect with grandkids, how you might be more intentional in understanding their world and really getting engaged with them in their world. Then anticipate the difficulties that might come. And determine that in those difficulties, you are going to be the most loving, what I just said, the most loving, the most kind, the most grace-filled. You are going to be the one that is going to respond like Jesus. And you will find that will diminish the tensions and make the holidays as pleasant as you possibly can.
And more influence than dispensing of advice.
And influencing, and influence comes through that relationship. That's why you have to work on these things in order to build a relationship, so you do have influence.
Okay. Boy, we covered a lot of territory. Larry Fowler, wonderful guest. Second time, Larry, you've been on the show. I'm sure that we'll want you back again if you're available. Such great wisdom, and what better time of year for it. We wish you the best. And Merry Christmas, Larry Fowler.
Merry Christmas to you guys.
That's it. We wrap up another week of Elder Talk. Till next time.
You've been listening to Elder Talk, providing smart strategies for seniors with attorney CPA Joe Cordell. Listen again next Saturday for another edition of Elder Talk, sponsored by Cordell Planning Partners, your elder law advisors. For more information, visit eldercarelaw.com. That's eldercarelaw.com. The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely on advertisements.